Airport Committee meeting for Wednesday, 1st April at 12:35 PM. And in doing so, I acknowledge the traditional owners, the Kariyarra people, their leaders past, present and future who have and who will continue to contribute to the betterment of the town of Port Hedland. Welcome everybody. Item three, recording of attendance, with attendance as listed following, with the exception of the replacement of Dr. Ken King for Mr. Chris McMahon, and with the removal of Mr. Brad Polenko. He is an apology, as is Councillor Butson. And then item 3.3, approved leave of absence, Councillor Jan Gillingham. Are there any more apologies? Okay, item 4, responses to questions, to previous questions. Item 4.1, questions from public at the Airport Committee meeting held on Wednesday, 11th March 2015. There are nil. Item 4.2, questions from committee members at the Airport Committee meeting held on Wednesday, the 11th of March. There was one, and it was by myself, and duly noted and answered. So we'll move on to item 5, public time. Just an important note, this meeting is being recorded on audio tape as an additional record of the meeting and to assist with minute-taking purposes, which may be released upon request to third parties. If you do not give permission for recording your participation, please indicate this at the meeting. The public is also reminded that in accordance with section 6.16 of the Town of Port Hedland local law on standing orders, nobody shall use any visual or vocal electronic device or instrument to record the proceedings of any meetings unless that person has been given permission by the presiding member to do so. Okay, item 5.1, public question time. I declare public question time open at 12:37. Are there any public questions? I do have one that has been submitted via email. So if there aren't any physically here, I will go ahead and read a public question from Mr. Bob Neville, which was received on the 12th of March. Bob has written in to say thanks. Why is it? Down the bottom. This doesn't make sense. Where's his question? Because that's
an add-on from his question.
Okay. Well, I'll just read it because it looks like there should have been a question before that, which is weird, but anyway. It says, thanks for your response, Joe. However, I think the Airport Committee should take a long, hard look at this decision, re the cafe. So I'm looking for the question, re the cafe. The other one was not staffed on my arrival to see someone off at the airport. And others have also told me it's hardly ever staffed, while it is a long way from the departure area. This is actually not correct. There was a period of 2 weeks where the Esplanade found it difficult to staff the cafe due to two cafe staff resigning with no notice. The coffee station is required to be staffed when there are scheduled flights and has some opening times as the main cafe. The cafe is now fully staffed and the coffee station has been opening in accordance with the required opening times.
Did you want me to...
I think we've got the responses would be better if we had the questions.
I can give you a bit of background, really, Chairman, if you permit me.
Sorry, I think Joe in governance is trying to say something.
Yes,
do you want to just tell us what the questions are, because this is
your
response.
You're actually on the big screen behind you, and that should be included in the agenda. So that was the original question and response, and that's the follow-on from there.
Okay, rightio. Thank you. Okay, So according to the agenda, he's on, Bob, I think the airport committee should take a long, hard look at this decision regarding the airport cafe. The other one, coffee carton arrival areas, was not staffed on my arrivals. To see someone off at the airport, and others have also told me it's hardly ever staffed while it is a long way from the departure area. So that's his first question. And Joe, I'll throw it to you to answer.
No, the answer has already been provided.
Okay,
Rodion,
thank you.
Brett? Yeah, so the issue was that the cafe had two staff resign with no notice, and so they found it difficult to staff the coffee station for a short period of time. I think it was a couple of weeks, might have even been 3 weeks, 3 to 4. But they've now fully staffed up, and that's opening in accordance with the required opening times. We've discussed that with the operator about the requirements under their lease and the like. But you know, these things can happen, I guess. So yeah, so the response is there.
Okay, fine. So in relation to the locked box, perhaps the committee could also justify why the ratepayer should be concerned with non-residents leaving their keys in their company vehicles. That's for the companies to resolve, not the ratepayer. So your response is. In relation to the lockbox?
Well, in relation to that, obviously the council doesn't like to see crime being committed in any way, shape or form, and has a responsibility in terms of the reduction or prevention of crime. And so we looked at this from that perspective, but we also looked at it from the perspective of the council shouldn't be out of pocket in any way or responsible for supplying potentially a lockbox situation. So in my response, I said we've actually looked at almost a user pay system. Equally, we've also looked at the cafe supplying the actual lockbox devices, and they're actually called surf locks, and they lock themselves to the car, and they lock the keys inside the actual padlock, and you have to have a combination. I have since met with the cafe and had a quick chat to them about potentially doing that. They've actually said that they have a envelope arrangement now with the FIFO workers. And what they actually do is they drop their keys in an envelope with a name on it. I don't think it's an ideal system, by the way. Mm. And then the person comes in that's going to collect the keys for the car. So the cars are locked now, and they collect the keys from the cafe. So I've suggested that potentially we can direct them to a site where they can actually purchase these padlocks, and they could supply them in the cafe, and people could buy them.
Is there any, to use that word, risk? If the wrong keys are given to the wrong person, is it going to fall back on us if something, you know, that I'm just thinking, whose responsibility does it come under?
This is something that came up when I was having a conversation with the cafe about potentially producing a product line that could be sold to the FIFO workers to organise for themselves a secure system of exchanging keys, keeping it completely at arm's length from us. The cafe advised me that they were doing this on behalf of the FIFO workers. It doesn't involve us at all in any way, shape or form. I actually did say to the cafe I thought there was a real risk in actually providing that service to them. That is entirely their decision.
So there's no risk to the council, as Councillor Hunter's asked?
No, not in that situation. We haven't asked them to put that in place at all.
So the fact that we've supplied a lockbox, or
we haven't.
Okay, good. We've responded to Mr. Neville's question. So are there any other further questions? Okay, in that case, we'll declare public question time closed at 12:43. Thank you. Public statement time. I'm off my game today. public statement time. Are there any? I declare public statement time open at 12:44. Are there any public statements? No? Then I will declare public statement time closed at 12:44 as well. Okay, moving on to item 6, questions from members without notice. Madam Mayor.
No questions from me.
Councillor Hunt.
Well, as per our discussion in the concept forum, is it possible that we can have some sort of
publicity or celebration of the airport and where it's at, and it's got the stained glass window back up, and get it in the newspaper and let people know that, wow, it's looking good, looking great, and this fantastic historic stained glass windows back out there, but in addition, all the international services that have all been
set up. Councillor, Director, can you give us an update to answer Councillor Hunt's question relating to the comms strategy and its implementation, please, and who is responsible for those types of marketing and communications?
Yes, through the Chair. You and I did discuss this yesterday, and I did raise it with Joe as well, and I think that you've also had a conversation as well. And so Joe started a process of looking at the comms strategy. We do have a comms strategy. The implementation has fallen to people like Janella in the past to update the website. Alison would update the Facebook site for the weekly comms and the like once those come through as well. What I've seen in the correspondence so far in that process is that Helen would potentially look after the Facebook page, and I'm looking at an email from you, Janella, at the moment, and Anthony and Rosie would also participate in assisting with the comms strategy. I see the corporate information team facilitating the dissemination of the PR campaign and the like. But obviously we would be responsible for providing information as and when we become aware of it and as and when initiatives are coming to a close.
Councillor Hunt, are you satisfied with that?
Thank you.
I'd really like to know if there is adequate resource to do what needs to be done. Are we adequately resourced, or is this... I know we've got a lot of names there, and Janella in particular, and I'm confused as to why Janella in her role would be involved with website updates or anything like that, given that I would have thought that would have been a job for corporate services and the information team to manage.
Madam Chair, that is historical. So I have been looking at it since our chat yesterday, and it'll happen.
Sorry, Janella, you had something to say?
If I may, through the Chair, my team and then ultimately myself have taken on the responsibility of providing the updates based on the project that's happening. So I think we're probably in the best position to be able to quickly just update some dot points on the project status. And instead of, I guess, having another person to then have to upload it, it's actually quite a simple process to send out the weekly updates and then update that same information on the website. I guess the part that's falling down the most is probably doing the marketing around some of those key highlights or achievements. So that's, I guess, what I haven't been able to do any of more of that in terms of the Facebook stuff. And certainly coming up to this weekend with the first Bali RPT flight, there's a lot of work and I guess marketing to be put around that. So that's probably one of the key highlights that we'll focus on now.
So if I can, through you acting CEO, will there be that marketing that is required in particular around the international flight and all of the other things?
Madam Chair, I'll make sure it happens. I'll get in touch with the media and make sure they cover it, and we'll do what's needed.
In-house?
In-house.
As well?
Yeah.
And if I may, Madam Chair, I have also sent a bit of a scripted statement about the new service to Alison. And Joe, and I have also contacted Virgin as well to try and understand why they aren't making a media release or some dance about it from their end. So I've asked them to try and implement something.
So,
between the two of us,
if I may, if I could request that our comms strategy be included inside of this agenda so we know what it is, because we've got a strategy but there's no implementation against it other than saying this is what we intend to do. But I think it's really important that this committee in particular keep your fingers on what is being communicated to the community. So if we could get a report, include where we are at with those, in particular the Facebook, the website, and what communication and marketing we're doing with around anything to do with communications to the community and the users. Thanks for that question, Jules. It's good. Any more? Flo? Jace?
I'm good, thanks.
Chris?
Good, thank
you. You had some questions around?
I think they've been answered.
Okay, fine. I'm sorry, you're not part of
I'm observing.
Okay, so I do have a couple of questions, if I may, please, just with regards to the belt system, which keeps coming back. Brett, if Director, if you could please enlighten us on what's happening with the belt system.
Step three, Madam Chair. We met with Glidepath last week. It was a very, very good meeting, I have to say, to discuss the belt system, its current operations, ongoing maintenance, improvement programs and the like. It was agreed that there was, I guess, two areas of the belt system that could be improved upon in terms of the falls for the bags. And just to explain that, there are two areas where there's a bit of a drop as the bag goes from one system to the next system, which sometimes has bags falling out of their troughs that they run in. So they are going to come back with just some quotes to fix those two areas. They're actually quite doable, quite fixable, involved a little bit of cutting and welding, but the rest of it was just some adjustments to the baggage belt system. We also went through and looked at the windowing system for the bags from the Virgin end. Currently that's not working in an ideal fashion, which then results in suspending check-in either at the Virgin end or the Qantas end, but usually typically at the Virgin end for about 10 minutes to clear bags. The feedback from Glidepath, who provide our services, was that if they could get that windowing working correctly, then the system should operate adequately at peak times. And so the suggestion was that we would get their IT guy up to actually sit in the terminal and watch the operation and tweak the operation of the baggage system over a 4-day period during the peak times, so watching the bags operate over the peak times. And the things that he was going to be looking at was the slowing down or acceleration of the baggage system and incorporating potentially bigger gaps to allow adequate windowing. And that if he could do that, then he could fine-tune the system. And I guess their comment was that the system should then work adequately for our current requirements. So I've asked them for a proposal to do just that.
Thanks, Director. And just last question from me is with regards to the wayfinding signages and signs that were supposed to be. Do we still have a projected timeline on that?
We currently don't have a budget for it, so I've had, Matt and I caught up really quickly on it. What I've asked Nat to do is be the project lead on wayfinding, particularly from the internal perspective, but also external to the airport. And so we're going to catch up on that and work out a program and a budget to incorporate that, so that we put that into the budget for the next financial period, so that we can, start improving wayfinding. And we're talking about things such as that softball sign as you go out, you know, that's put something more appropriate up to greet people coming into Port Hedland, you know, around information potentially and stuff like that. So we'll look at that whole wayfinding experience.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right then, item...
Sorry.
Sorry, just about wayfinding.
Yes.
We thought about looking at maybe some sponsorship for the signage from local business.
Sure. Good idea, Jace. All right. Fantastic. Item 7, declaration by members to have given due consideration to all matters contained in the business papers presented before this meeting. Can I have a show of hands, please? Thank you very much. Let the record reflect 6. Thank you. Item 8, confirmation of minutes of the previous meeting. Item 8.1, confirmation of minutes of the airport meeting committee meeting held on Wednesday the 11th of March 2015. Are there any points of clarification?
No points, so moved.
Thank you, Councillor Hunt. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Those against? The record reflects 6-0. Okay. Item 9, announcement by presiding member without discussion. I do have just one announcement, and that was that the CEO and the manager of compliance and operations had the pleasure of attending the Regional Airport Development Conference last week in Brisbane. It was a two-day conference, and the speakers I've been to, this is my third one, and this conference was the most relevant that I've been to. All the speakers, in effect, had topics which very much related to the airport operations, and in particular, because it was the development of airports, it had a lot of good information considering the journey that Port Hedland International Airport has been on and is currently in. So we had speakers from Todd Chapman, who is the, who is the state manager or the Australian manager of Qantas. He chaired the opening. So we had speakers from a whole heap of different airports, including Wellcamp, which is a new airport that's just been constructed, and it's a big project that's occurred in the Toowoomba area. We had speakers from QUIT who gave statistics on airport airport operations, just airports development and opportunities to be seized. We had some really good security screening speakers from Launceston Airport, which gave us some really good incentives to bring back, and we passed that on to Brett. And then and I guess we had several operators talk about their experience in the airports that they run. And there were ones that were small, which were council-owned operations, and then there were others that had privatised, so long-term lease. So it was good because we are currently council-owned, and then we're looking at a long-term lease. So it sort of gave us that gambit, which was really, really good, I thought. So what I will do is I'll send a report through to all the committee members of our observations at the conference. I will also attach here all the presentations from the conference, because there's several that are really, really good. So I'll pick those out and then have those sent out to you. So that's about all I've got to report, unless Eleanor, you want to add to that, because you had some very, you were busily taking notes like I was.
Yes, going through. A lot of good ideas to come out from a communications perspective, and how they get their feedback from their passengers. I'm investigating how we can implement that here at Port Hedland. It seems rather straightforward and simple, but being in touch with Launceston about how they did at that fare screening point, yep, through customer surveys. But again, through the chair, it was exciting from my perspective, because it was extremely relevant to where we are and where we're going. And the gamut, as you said, from small airports like Mildura through to Newcastle, Gold Coast, and how they've been handling their development. So it was quite relevant. It was quite a good experience.
And I guess the theme of the one thing, and Eleanor's mentioned, that was very, very much went across every speaker's sort of presentation, was really about, firstly, knowing our airport. Knowing your airport, knowing what we do in our airport as being a real key priority. So in that, the second one was knowing who uses our airport. So it was about knowing what we do as an airport, and then knowing who it is that uses our airport. And they were key in just about all presentations. So with that fact, they were able to grow or shrink or improve and do things to their airports that made a big difference. And I think we're on that journey by the customer service survey that we just effected. So that's why I want Brett to talk more about it. But it was great. It was a great conference, and you'll get all that information shortly. Happy to take any questions if anybody has any questions around that. Okay. Right, with that done, what we will do now is move on to item 10, and we are going to phone in to Mr. Alex C. Goulot, the Deputy CEO of the Pilbara Regional Council. And just before we get Alex C. on the phone, to highlight to committee members that this you might not have heard about, not all of the members might have heard about, but in February there was a workshop held by the Pilbara Regional Council, and it was around what is known and being colloquialised as the Pilbara Enterprise Zone. Now, for those of us who haven't heard or may be familiar with, there are special economic zones which are talked about at state and federal government level, and are pretty much zones that where there are concessions that range from legislative concessions from state, from governments at all level, incentives, tax incentives, and those types of things are generally quite normal inside the special economic zones. Now, we all know that we've been talking about special economic zones at a federal level. No one's interested in the taxation incentives, because the federal government's not interested in talking about any concessions relating to tax. So what the Pilbara have now come up with is renaming it, rebadging it to be the Pilbara Enterprise Zone, which really relates to several things that have no financial implication. But what it does do is ask government to commit regulatory-wise to incentivizing business to come and develop and create enterprise and invest in the Pilbara region. So this is specifically for the Pilbara region. It is known as the PES, so you will hear a lot more about it. And the really exciting thing is that the people who are developing the enterprise have focused Lumsden Point, which is here in Port Hedland. They've identified it as the first Australian economic zone that they want to create. Because Australia, sadly, doesn't have any zones, but all around the world, there are many. And you'll see the YouTube video very shortly. So at that workshop, they announced the Pilbara Enterprise Zone, and they announced that the area they're looking at is Lumsden Point, which is the back of the inner harbour there. There's 150 acres already cleared. So as a follow-on from that workshop, the town of Port Hedland at the last OCM resolved to, and I'll read it out verbatim so that those of our community members will understand what we've done. So basically, following on from that that workshop and the identification of Lumsden Point as the first location for the PES, the council has supports the efforts of the Pilbara Regional Council to develop the Pilbara Enterprise Zone based in Port Hedland, including a separate legislative act providing the PES with autonomy to manage its own operations and development in accordance with agreed values and objectives set by the government, implementation of the selection of targeted incentives and policy incentives designed to promote and facilitate diversified investment into the Pilbara, the implementation of a specifically designed development lease model together with a long-term management framework for the operation, attraction and development of industry clusters, and the establishment of a separate specialised development fund for the PES to provide seed capital for start-up and targeted industry sectors to establish within the zone and expand. And number two, recommend that A, the initial focus of creating the PES be directed at the Lumsden Point site as identified through the scoping study undertaken by the Pilbara Regional Council, and B, to subject to there being no impediments to creating the PES, that the Port Hedland International Airport, Badauri Strategic Industrial Estate and the Kingsford Smith Business Park also be considered for inclusion into the PES. So what the town is recommending is that where Lumsden Point has been targeted by state as the first location, it is the town's wish to see those incentives and attractions for business development to be considered as part of some of the areas that we've just highlighted there. So with that in mind. We'll try to get a hold of Alex Goulot, who will talk to us and explain a little bit more about PES, and then we'll get the YouTube video.
Through his mobile way of sound.
That's 4G.
Sounds like it's diverting. Alexi, it's Brett Reese speaking. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Very good, very good. You're on speakerphone talking to the entire airport committee. I'll just hand over to our chairperson, Gloria.
Hi, Alexi. How are you? It's Councillor Jacob here. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Councillor Jacob?
Good, good. Look, I'm really thankful that you made some time to present to the airport committee around the exciting thought process around the Pilbara Economic Zone. So we're looking forward to you enlightening us on what it's all about, and also we've got the YouTube clip about to be ready to go. Do you want to play it first, or do you want to talk to it?
I think it's probably wise to play it first, and then you probably won't even have a need of me speaking to the enterprise.
All right, no worries. Well, let us play the video, and then we'll take questions from the committee, you can present to us further.
Wonderful. Thank
okay,
you.
Thanks, Alexi.
Thanks, guys.
Over the past half century, Australia has become complacent, content to ride on the back of its natural resources, with insufficient focus on the value add. Our manufacturing industries are in decline, and standards in the service industries have slipped behind other developed nations. This has been enabled because other nations were developing quickly and required these resources to fuel their own economic growth. It is time to end the complacency that comes with viewing Australia as the lucky country, or the clever country. Both of these adages are true, but require an element of making our own luck and investing in our own cleverness. Throughout this period, other nations have recognised the importance of domestic value added through strong policy that underpins long-term growth in the domestic economy. Many of these same nations have understood the importance of proactive investment attraction, seeking to encourage global companies to establish points of presence within their regions. Today, there are more than 5,000 special economic zones operating across 120 countries that are responsible for around $600 billion in export revenue. Australia's major Asian trade partners have established such zones, attracting hundreds of millions of dollars in national and international investment. Many of these zones have already been extremely successful in attracting investment away from our own manufacturing sector and to other jurisdictions, where the investment climate is more attractive. just one example of the power of special economic zones as an investment incentive that advertises a widget as being open for business. The Cumberland Empowerment Zone in the US facilitated more than 130 job-creating projects, leading to around 2,000 job opportunities for residents. Discovery Park Enterprise Zone in the UK currently hosts around 60 tenants. The broader UK Enterprise Zone program has generated approximately $1 billion in investment, with 4,600 local jobs created since 2011. Since the establishment of Shenzhen Special Economic Zone in China, it has developed from a small fishing village to a thriving metropolis. Between 2001 and 2005, its economy grew by an average of 16.3% annually. Now let's talk about what is currently happening in the Pilbara. A technology-driven and highly mechanized operating environment has increasingly marginalized the Australian workforce, viewed internationally as more expensive and less productive than other jurisdictions. The scale of concentrated investment combined with a lack of broader development and capacity in the region has created a high-cost structure and a volatile economy. Broader and value-adding investment have been largely crowded out by the strength and bias of the resources sector. Australia has been left at a disadvantage in securing high-value investment. Foreign investors encounter many obstacles getting established in Australia. Lack of available service land, time-consuming and burdensome government regulation, complex tax system, expensive labour, and lack of consistency and transparency in approvals. Opportunities are being missed for both Australia and the international investment community. Key Pilbara stakeholders are seeking to create a world-class investment destination. The Pilbara Enterprise Zone. The zone aims to create a long-term competitive environment for domestic and international investments and to strengthen the capacity of the entire Pilbara region. This is consistent with the federal government's vision for the development of Northern Australia and central to continuing development of the state of Western Australia. By packaging the region in this way, the Pilbara Enterprise Zone can differentiate itself when marketing to both international and domestic investment proponents, lowering some of the existing barriers and offering specific incentives and programs to deepen and diversify investment in the local economy. The Pilbara Regional Council has been working with a group of regional partners to progress the Pilbara Enterprise Zone and now needs to enlarge this stakeholder group to progress this any further. To date, we have completed a number of concrete steps. So what's next? How do we move this from concept to reality? Who needs to be involved and what do they need to do? A separate legislative act providing the zone with the autonomy to manage its own operations and development in accordance with agreed objectives set by the government. Establishment of an inaugural CES management consortium. Implementation of a number of incentives designed to stimulate diversified investment. Implementation of a specially designed development lease model, together with a long-term management framework for the operation, attraction and development of industry clusters. Provision of a specialised federal development fund for the zone to enable companies to establish within the zone and expand. Australia has become wealthy off the resources located within the Pilbara. It benefits the entire country to proactively face challenges to new investment and to accept sensible risk in encouraging further development of this region.
Lexi, the committee have just watched that very enthralling YouTube video, so would you like to add to that?
Well, look, the I think the purpose of the video was to try to encapsulate something that's actually quite a complex financial and economical topic into something that's a little bit easier to understand. It's a project that the Pilbara Regional Council has been working on for quite a number of months now. And we've been through rounds and rounds of literature review, some economic and financial analysis, some sites and master planning analysis. There's been a lot of thought that's been into this, but from my perspective, the Australia is the only country in the Indian Ocean Ring that still isn't using one of those special economic zones as an instrument, as an ammunition to try to bring some foreign investment. There's 5,000 of them around the world, but by and large, they've all been very successful. So in trying to design the Pilbara Enterprise Zone, we've learned from the past. We've learned from what those zones look like and what makes them work around the world. We've tailored the context to the Australian context and decided that there was a number of things that could get in the way of getting that zone and Australia's first enterprise zone up and running, and decided to work without those particular obstacles. I'm referring here in particular to some federal tax concessions, which are quite common in other countries. In Australia, I think in a very early conversation in Canberra, we received a pretty clear signal that the minute that we were going to look at a special economic zone as an instrument and connect this with federal tax incentives, it was never going to get off. So we've been clever in our approach and try to remove any obstacles out of the way. And 12 plus months later, we've received a lot of positive feedback and on principle support from the federal government. We're yet to have any negative comments from the state on the approach that we're proposing. And we're now actively lobbying at state and federal level and trying to kick this project into its next step. Is there any particular questions or anything that could clarify perhaps about on the project?
No, that's good. What I might do is I might go around the table, Alexi, if I could, mm-hmm. And then see if the members have any questions in relation to the PES.
Absolutely.
Okay, Madam Mayor? Councillor Hunt?
No.
Flo? Jason?
I'm good, thanks.
Chris? Councillor? Oh, I'll let you ask, David, if you like. Well, Alexi, I think your video is very informative because it pretty much paints the picture for us all. We think it's really exciting. There doesn't seem to be too many questions at all. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, just from a personal perspective, I've tried to get a picture of what a special economic zone looks like, and the video refers to some key tenants. In this particular instance, with the Pilbara Enterprise Zone, I want to reinforce that we are trying to play to our strength. There's an existing mining and resourcing sector, which is not going to go away. So we've paired the logistics and marine services as a key theme for the establishment of the zone. That requires a lot of logistics and coordination, and a lot of thought has been put into trying to play to our strength and the strength of the region into the enterprise zone. One of the things that we talked about before is trying to understand what the scale or the magnitude of that zone is. The Pilbara Regional Council recently visited the Clark Enterprise Zone in the Philippines. And just to give you one extreme example of what those zones could look like, we were in conversation with Texas Instruments. That a couple of years ago established a presence in the Clark Enterprise Zone. And in the feasibility study, we're looking at putting circa 75,000 employees within the zone. and to date have created 500 local employment opportunities as a result of establishing themselves within that zone. So that's one extreme example, but those things around the world just seem to work, and would love to be able to push this all the way down to a successful establishment of Australia's first special economic zone.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Lexi. I guess we talked about the Lumsden Point. Have you got any update on where they've identified or indicated that Lumsden Point is the preferred first site? So do you have any update on that from Chamber of Commerce and Industry?
No, so we have been engaging with the Department of Commerce, and we have an appointment for when my CEO returns from leave to meet with the DG at the Department of Commerce and try to segment that site selection further and the partnership between the PRC and the Department of Commerce.
Cool. Excellent. All right, Alexi, thank you very much for taking the time to do that presentation for us. We really appreciate it. We look forward to what the PRC comes up with moving this PES forward for us.
Lovely. Thank you for having me. Thanks for your time.
Excellent. Thanks.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Right. It's pretty exciting, eh? Look at everyone. All right, let's move on to... Just a quick disclaimer that members of the public are cautioned against taking any action or on council decisions on items on this evening's agenda in which they may have an interest until formal notification in writing by the town has been received. Decisions made at this meeting can be revoked pursuant to the Local Government Act of 1995. All right. Let's move on to page 12. Item 11, reports of officers. Item 11.1, Office of the CEO, 11.1.1, the airport management report. And what I might ask the director to do is go through and have the officers talk through the reports here. So, Brett?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll talk through, the executive summary of the report, and then if there's any questions around specific aspects of the report, perhaps we can field those from the responsible officers. So by way of introduction, the aeronautical growth section of this report proposing to update this with more relevant numbers. I'm now starting to get some tables through the AVDATA website, which are a little bit more useful now. So these numbers that are reported here are actually from the Bureau of Infrastructure, Transport and Regional Economics, and that's why they're December's numbers, because they're collated on a national basis and they take a little bit more time. So hopefully for the next report, we'll actually have numbers that are only 30-odd days from there. But just talking to the numbers really quickly, the December period, we actually had a drop on the prior comparable December period of 1.2%. But on year-to-date figures, we still have growth from the prior year-to-date of 4.7%. Having said that, we are seeing a softening in numbers in this year, in this calendar year. And we are projecting that passenger growth will drop to 500,000 passengers for this year, where it was closer to 515,000 last year. And we are expecting further drop in passengers in the following year as the Roy Hill project comes off the boil. Somewhere between 30 and 60,000 packs may come out of that figure. I'm hopeful myself that it's only around the 30. I guess that's my gut feel on that. And then we'll see us go back into steady growth. In terms of obviously the 737-800 operation, the Virgin Flight and International Services, work is progressing at a pace. I think I said earlier in my presentation that the service starts on 4 April, and there will be some works that will be completed up to 11 April. And I think, Janella, from memory, the offices are at the end of the month, the actual offices in front of the terminal?
Through the chair, that's about the 12th of May, is the completion date.
It's the 12th of May. Thank you. So those works are ongoing. We're coming towards completion, and the lion's share of those works will be completed in time for the first service to commence on Saturday, with some contingency around some of the elements that are being delivered. For instance, not every operable wall will be in place, and so we'll be using some temporary walls. So it'll be all hands on deck to make sure that the operation goes off reasonably seamlessly. Reports from Virgin's that the loadings for the first aircraft are around, I think it's 60-odd passengers coming in and about 50 passengers going out. They're not actually disappointed with those loads because they haven't done a lot of promotion around the service just yet. And given that we will be trialling the new operations, less is probably better for us while we work out the kinks in the new operation in the first service. I'm viewing the lesser numbers in this first service to be actually a blessing, so that we can actually run through the turnaround and see what works and what doesn't work in that regard. Just in terms of some financial updates, we have applied for funding through the National Stronger Regions Funds late last year for funding for the sewer and water projects was $13.9 million in works there, and we've requested 50% funding against that. We're due to get a response on that in May, which is whether we go to the next stage. So we're looking at about $6.95 million in funding from that. So we're hopeful that that we get a positive response on that. In terms of outstanding charges, we spoke earlier on about the airline in question, and very pleasing, I guess, from my perspective, that through our relationship management program and the engagement we've had, that we've been able to amicably resolve that outstanding dispute on charges, and that will be settled by 30 June. In terms of stakeholder communications, we had the regional airports conference, and we had the Deputy Mayor, the CEO and Ellie attend the conference, and by all accounts a very good conference it was. We had obviously the airline relationship meetings as well during that period, which was all very, very positive. Just on staffing matters, just as confirmation from the earlier questions, I will be acting in the role going forward until such time as a decision is made on the long-term lease and whether that goes ahead or not, and so I'll be up here on a weekly basis to assist in that role. In terms of just internal staffing matters, we do have two ARO vacancies which we are backfilling at the moment, and we do have an administration vacancy, so we've got a temporary staff pool that are backfilling those roles. We've been talking with people in culture about some opportunities and some strategies around those roles and around filling those roles. It does involve two internal candidates and a candidate potentially from our temporary staff pool. So we were looking at a strategy of filling those roles in the very near future. But we're also taking a bit of a look at the whole airport's human resource structure. And are there more efficient ways to run that, particularly around car parking and air traffic managers and the like. So that's just a bit of an update on that. On the air conditioning matter, I said earlier on that the IT manager was Seb. I was taking the lead role in the rectification process. We are expecting a rectification report which will look at what's working, what's not working, what needs replacing, what needs repairing, with recommendations and a program of works to actually rectify the air conditioning. I have to say, Seb's actually worked above and beyond the call of duty, being there first thing in the morning and last thing at night sometimes, and it's very pleasing at the moment that the air conditioning is actually working quite well. So I'd just like to say it's a credit to Seb and the team as well for the work that they've put in that. And just finally, just on operational matters, we did have what's called a missed approach in this period at the airport. This involved I think it was a Virgin aircraft had to perform the missed approach. Qantas aircraft had landed on the runway and was going to exit at an earlier taxiway, but as one of our AROs was actually on the taxiway, had to go to the next taxiway, which meant that they had spent longer on the runway than was anticipated, and air traffic control had basically lined up the next aircraft to land. They had to go around, basically, and recommence their approach. So we've done a review of that and implemented procedures to make sure that AROs are completely aware, I guess, of their situation around them, and that we don't have those further situations in the future. I don't know, Ellie, if you wanted to add anything to that?
No.
Okay. So that's just a real brief summary of the report. I'm happy to throw it open for questions on any matters in the report.
Beautiful. Any points of clarification from Brett's report? Okay, I just had one addition I'd like to make, and I spoke to Brett about this previously. Just that all of our officers' reports, and because we've all just finished training in governance risk and compliance, I'm requesting that there be a risk analysis for inside of some of these reports, and especially around, I've just noted some areas here which would be like when we're talking about commercial opportunities, what are the risks if those international, the passenger numbers don't go up, what is the risk to us given that we've spent a substantial amount. Also in your financial area, it goes without saying that if we don't get that funding, what does that mean to the town of Port Hedland in May? So I just want some highlighted notations on the risk, and maybe a risk plan, or what is the plan B if plan A doesn't work. So, and then also around your passenger numbers, what happens if they go up or down, more down than up, I suppose. So if we could please, Director, include some of those risks that should be highlighted to the committee, and also if there's an action plan to mitigate those risks. Okay, so without any other clarifications, may I have somebody to accept the recommendation that the Airport Committee notes the Airport Management Report?
Madam Chair, if I may, before we go on, I should have thought Janella was going to talk to the development section.
Sorry, I do apologise. Janella, let me throw the table open to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it possible to call up Brett's presentation so I can address the plan? I'm sure Grace has that.
Did you... Sure. Loki Biski.
One above it.
Okay, one above it. Here it is.
Exactly what the situation will look like at the airport for this Saturday, so that everyone knows and I guess can share that information with the community as we will be, and know exactly what to expect, and then obviously what's going to be happening moving forward. So this plan is the eventual layout of exactly the stage two of what we're doing at the moment. So Brett's covered some of this already, but we've demolished the toilets the office that was in there. We've demolished the toilets that were in there as well. So previously, this building line came to here, so it was a little bit squishy in this area for people to get to the baggage area. So by demolishing this, we've actually provided a greater presence to the baggage area, which should help to clear that up a lot quicker. Toilet block has been put in place here and is being plugged in over the next 2 days. And also a wall is going to be put along here to join it up to actually make it part of this international area. And obviously part of the future project is to have the screening and the artworks and so forth there. So that toilet will be in operation on Saturday. This is the new wall that's been installed. That is all complete and clad. So that has the colour bond cladding on the outside. All of the windows are in, all of the doors are in, and all the doors have been energised and are working. It actually looks really good from the air side, and there is that photo that's in there I'll show you as well. The colour bond makes such a difference to what was there previously. Along this line, my hand's shaking. Along that line is where the existing wall was in. So this one's been taken out, this one has been taken out, and then by Saturday, this wall will be taken out as well. So all of that new area, that extended area, should be complete. Potentially, depending on how the contractors go, there might be, say, one section of wall still in there, but this will be the departures area, and because we know the numbers are quite small, there'll still be plenty of space in there for the international departures on the day. What we have at the moment in there is we actually have a temporary wall along here, which will actually form the wall of where these new customs modules are going to be relocated to. Right now, the customs modules are sitting in here. The second module has been put together. At 3:30 this afternoon, I'm meeting with customs, and we're actually moving these over to this location, energising them up, making sure they all work and everything's fine for the flights on Saturday. So they will be in place for the flights on Saturday. These toilets in here are currently under construction. There is some hoarding that goes along here, so people can't get into them, but the contractors can still get in there and do their work. It's unlikely that these toilets will be finished for Saturday, so they will be finished for the following weekend. So on Saturday, this area will still be hoarded off. We still have, and we had for last weekend's flight, a couple of portaloos sitting out here because we didn't have any toilets operational within this area. So these toilets were in effect and they were monitored through our airport staff to help people, escort people to the toilets and back. Plus there was information on the flights to advise people that toilet facilities were limited on that day. So, you know, use the facilities on the plane before they get off, plus the portaloos are there as well. They could still be in effect, given that these toilets won't be operational on Saturday. The other thing that won't be complete on the Saturday, as Brett did mention, was having the actual bifold doors through here and also through here that will close it off and do the swing lounge kind of arrangement from international arrivals and departures perspective. So what we actually do, will have, is just some temporary walls up where we need them to be, and as Brett mentioned, all hands on deck to physically move them and put them in the next location in that kind of 10-minute window that we have to do the swap around between the two different flights. So that has been put in place. All of the bulkheads and everything are complete for the bifold doors, but the doors themselves aren't due to arrive in Port Hedland until Friday at the earliest, which means maybe Saturday.
Isn't this Good Friday,
Sorry?
Isn't this Good Friday?
Exactly. Oh, so that's why we've made sure we've got that contingency in place, so we can still make it completely functional for the flight. The following weekend, everything will all be in place. So in terms of, I guess this is it looks still like very much a construction site through here. There's still work to be done on bulkheads in the ceiling to hide all the new wiring. The floor that has been extended through there will be flush finish, and it will be completely safe and trafficable, but the new vinyl to match the existing won't be installed by this Saturday. So everything will be functional, but not necessarily finished, but the function was the priority to make it functional. The other area, part of this project, is the new offices out on this side. So the steel framing has actually been installed just over the last day or two for these new offices. They still need to be clad. The internal framing still needs to go up and new doors and so forth put in, and that all needs to be tidied up. That's the part of the work that's happening up until the 12th of May. So obviously that's not the priority compared to this area, because this area being functional was the deadline for the 4th, for Saturday. The other areas that will still be worked on after the falls is currently, and we have had for some time, just ramps at these gate exits, because there is a drop between the airport terminal and the actual apron area there. So what they're doing throughout this area over the coming few weeks as well is actually changing the levels in there, improving the stormwater drainage and making sure there is really safe and accessible access for people in wheelchairs or limited abilities as well. But again, for all the flights, the ramps will still be in place and they'll be completely safe. So it's operational, but there's still more work happening as well. So is there any other questions in terms of the status for this weekend and then moving forward? I just wanted to make sure everybody knew exactly what to expect.
Great.
Good work.
Thank you.
Oh, did you want to show the photos?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Please.
So this here is the airside access. The doors hadn't been put in place at the time when the photo was taken. But this is basically the colour bomb finish with the black window frames, which actually looks really good. The colour here might not show up too well, but it's kind of a deep grey mocha kind of colour. This colour will actually work really well. It's the same colour bomb that we're putting on the new offices along the front of the building. And if you have a look at some of the artwork concepts that we've received so far, the colour palettes with the earthy kind of colours will actually go really well with that colour bond that it will join into along the front. That's the lovely toilet block, as Brett did mention. This one's probably a really good photo just to show how the international arrivals area is really opened up now. So even though we've got the chair, we've put the chairs across here just because this floor finish wasn't done at the time. But previously, this was all a wall through here, and you only had just kind of this point to go through to the baggage collection. Now there's just the one column there, and this whole section is open. We can put some more seats in there and things like that, so people can wait or children can go off to the side or whatever. So that's opened up. Obviously, where I was standing to take the photo to was I basically had my back to the old external wall, but that's been pushed back another metre and a half, 2 metres, so it's given that extra space too. Plus there used to be an office in here. You can just see the footprint where the wall, the floor has joined the old office. So that's given another 3.5 odd metres of space in that area as well. And the new arrangement for all of the desks and the x-ray machine and so forth is taking advantage of that space. So they will all be pushed around for the Saturday flight with the tensor barriers in the configuration that Brett mentioned through here. Not sure if you wanted to talk through any more of kind of this
any
table,
of those dates.
But it's all pretty self-explanatory in the...
So are we on track for those
yes.
projections?
Yep. So that's all underway and going fine.
Excellent. Thanks, Janella. No other questions, committee? Okay, with that having been clarified, then I'll take somebody to move that we accept the report. And Councillor Hunt. Thank you, Jason. Second of Jason. Those against? Let the record reflect 6. Okay. Item page 21 we move to then. On our last leg home. So item 11.1.2, Air Services Development Proposal. With the officer's recommendation that the Airport Committee notes the 3 consulting engagement letter which has been provided for its review. Are there any points of clarification?
No points, so moved.
Thank you. Seconded. Thank you, Chris.
Second. I'm Chris.
Just getting your name up there, Chris.
Right, deeply reading.
Those against? Okay, let the record reflect 6. Okay, move on to item page 23, item 12, late items as submitted by the presiding member. There are none. Item 13, motions of which previous notice has been given. There is nil. Item 14, confidential items. There is nil. Item 15, applications for leave of absence for the next airport committee meeting, which is to be held on Wednesday the 13th May. Are there any applications for leave of absence? Flo? Jason? Chris? All those? Okay. That's fine. There is nil. Item 16, attendance by telephone or instantaneous communications, acknowledging that this has to be ratified by council at its next OCM. Are there any applications for attendance by phone or instantaneous communications going around the table? No? I'm just going to highlight that I might be one of those. But then I'm sure the deputy chair may be able to chair that meeting. So I'll put my name down for that. Thanks. I just need somebody to accept. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Councillor Hunt. Okay. All in favour, thank you very much. 6-0. Item 17, closure. Right, as mentioned, 17.1, the next meeting of the airport committee is scheduled for Wednesday, the 13th of May, 12:30, with the public agenda briefing commencing at 12:15. And just so we know that I'm actually for the next meeting, I'm wondering if we can't start the confidential briefing concept forum at 11:30. That gives us enough time in case we overrun. So is that acceptable to everyone? So we start at 11:30 instead of 11:45 for the concept forum, and then move into the public agenda briefing at 12:15 and the meeting at 12:30. So if that's okay with everyone, I'll move to close the meeting and thank everybody for their input. Officers, thank you very much. And committee, thank you for taking time to turn up today and for your contribution. So we close the meeting at 1:45. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.